Oh yeah, it's working.
I thought that was the opening. That would be great.
Oh, it might
yeah,
be. It
I was
might
very
be.
I was very thrown by that, to be honest.
Oh yeah, it's time for podcast 2187, y'all. All
right, hold on. Let's give Phasma her moment. Do our introduction.
Welcome to podcast 2187. Enjoy the show, and don't forget to submit your blaster for inspection.
All right. So what is this? Episode 9? Is that right? Yeah. Yeah,
I believe
it's
it
episode
is.
9. If it's not episode 9, then guess what it is now. Welcome everybody to episode 9 of podcast 2187.
Goodness gracious.
Oh yeah.
My name is Tim and I'm your host. I'm joined as always by my amazing co-hosts Jared and Mark. How are you guys doing tonight?
Pretty
oh,
well.
Oh yeah.
That's all Mark's going to say. We're going to interpret his oh yeah.
Oh yeah. You're the slightly Australian. Don't tell Saf I said that. All right. So if you guys are doing fine, we got a lot to talk about tonight. Mainly, I think a lot of it's going to come from our spoiler section, but we'll see. Because I think that can have a lot of nice discussion. But for now, let's get into our non-spoiler section.
Non-spoiler section.
Oh, yeah.
And what have I done? And let's get to some news first. Let's talk about This Is Madness. And I'm not talking about the podcast Mark and that other guy Noah started.
Whatever.
I'm talking about the bracket, the March Madness type bracket for Star Wars that StarWars.com puts out every year. Is this their fourth time, I believe?
I think it is.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, and do not take my word on this, but I think the winners have in the past have been Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Darth Vader. And I think this year is going to be more dynamic because we have an entire new set of characters to work with from The Force Awakens. So
it's
we'll going to
be
how it
Rey.
Goes. We'll see. It, you know, very well could be.
I think they might just rig it with the placements and whatnot.
I don't know. I just think I don't even know. I mean, Rey is a force to be reckoned. Rey is a force to be reckoned with.
All right, so
Rey is a force to be reckoned with as far as her popularity. I only see her getting more and more popular. So I think people might be, you know, tired of the old people winning. So they'll go with Rey.
Well, I think the new cast is exciting. And Rey seems to be the most popular of the new cast. So it would make sense for her to do really well.
Yeah.
All I can
that makes sense.
All I can speak to is on Star Wars Card Trader, which I play religiously. Rey's like the first card that if you just get that there's a base card, you can actually get enough of those and trade it for something good. There's never been cards like that. Everybody wants Rey. Rey, you know, Rey's the thing. So she's valuable in that. I'm sure lots of people will pick her, so
I don't see any scenario where she doesn't make it far, if not win.
And I think you guys have a good handle on it. I mean, I've heard some criticism about like the way the bracketing is. You know, like Fifth Brother was up against Vader or something today. So it feels like, is there any way that's ever gonna work? Is not saying that Fifth Brother is ever gonna advance beyond where he starts, just because he's brand new, you know, Rebels, and he's a minor character who might not be, the most well-liked. But, either way, I feel like putting him up against Vader, it's like you got to start off with somebody who's in Vader's league, comparable.
Well, no, not really, because if they're doing it anything like the real March Madness brackets,
right.
You always have the top seed or the top team plays against, like, number 30. The best team plays against, like, let's say the 30th, the worst team.
That makes sense.
And that's why they call them upsets, because the team that's not supposed to win wins. And so it's kind of the same situation with this, to where you're not going to put Vader up against Kenobi right off the bat. You're going to wait for that after people vote. So you got to put Vader up against somebody who's tactically shouldn't win and might if it's an upset.
I think that's fair. I just feel like because it is, literally a popularity contest, I feel like it's harder to do an upset than it is in a sports situation, because there's less left a chance, it's literally just what we would think, I think, because of popular opinion. But at the same time, I think you're right that Rey probably has a really good chance. If, and like you said, Tim, if she doesn't make it all the way, then she's going to make it really far. And I don't know. I mean, Kenobi always makes it far, right? Vader and Yoda always make it far.
You know, talking about popularity contests, I learned today a very sad thing about popularity contests since Podcast 2187 did not make it to the final rounds of the Star Wars Podcast Awards.
I thought we had a good shot at a couple of them, but, you know, it happens.
Hey, and getting to the semifinals, I think I'm proud of that because we just started. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that means there are people who nominated us out of the blue, just the write-ins, so I'm happy about that for sure.
Well, I didn't nominate anybody, so at least it's not me.
Yeah, no, I feel the same.
So one write-in might have been me, but Tim our podcast.
Tim got us in. Good job, Tim.
I hope I'm not the only one, but we'll see.
No, for the nominations, I didn't nominate us at all. In fact, I didn't nominate anybody. I just let the chips fall where they may. I was thankful to be, you know, nominated and considered, and I thought that we had a good showing overall. And obviously, I voted for us when, you know, they actually had the balloting or whatever. But I was happy considering we were barely on the map, and we're just getting better and better. It was nice. You know, thank you to all the listeners that voted for us. I know all of us appreciate it. So.
Yes, and thanks so much to everyone who showed us support, you know, on Twitter and whatnot. It was really kind, and we definitely appreciate it.
You know what I just realized? It might have been my fault because when I did the write-in, I put us in for a few categories. Not all of them, of course, because I'm fair. But I put us in for a few, and for fanboy host, I put in Mark and Jared and not me. So they might have just based it off of my... But you know what?
Did you accidentally put me for score tracks?
No, I was going to say, I didn't put you in as score tracks, though. So.
No, and they said that it was listed for whatever was listed most, which means it was more than just you that nominated Mark, at least. You may have been the only one who nominated me. Thank you, Tim.
Well, I was also interested because for the best podcast overall, score tracks wasn't even on there. So, Mark, I have no idea how you ended up with that. But
it's what it is. I want to thank that person if they're a listener on this show also.
Sure, yeah. Anyone who did anything to help try and get us farther, we appreciate it.
That was nice, definitely.
Well, anyway, so that's all good. But for the MTV Awards, The Force Awakens is nominated for 11 of those. And it's kind of rare, but actually, just by looking at the lists overall, it seems like the MTV Awards might be a little bit more realistic than the Academy Awards were this year, as far as what people actually watch.
Yeah, for popular culture, they're definitely more realistic.
Right. So running through some of the nominees, just the ones that have Star Wars stuff in them. Movie of the year, the nominees were Avengers: Age of Ultron, Creed, Deadpool, Jurassic World, Star Wars: The Force Awakens, and Straight Outta Compton. Let's see, what was next? Best female performance. We got Alicia Vikander for Ex Machina, Anna Kendrick for Pitch Perfect 2, Charlize Theron for Mad Max, Daisy Ridley for Star Wars: The Force Awakens, Jennifer Lawrence for Joy, and someone whose name I cannot pronounce, and I should have researched this first, from Deadpool. And, you know, quick thing, I know I already said this.
Is it Marina Bacara?
Yeah, it looks like that, yeah. All right. Jennifer Lawrence for Joy. I know I said this before. I'm still a little annoyed with that. I like the movie, but anyway. Breakthrough performance was Amy Schumer for Trainwreck, Brie Larson for Room, Daisy Ridley, Star Wars: The Force Awakens, John Boyega for Star Wars: The Force Awakens, Dakota Johnson, 50 Shades of Grey, and O'Shea Jackson. O'Shea, that's what I thought. Jackson Jr. for Star Wars Straight Outta Compton. I need to just like actually read what I'm reading.
That's good advice. I taught many different grades for several years, and the first step towards reading is reading.
Is actually reading.
You can take that to the bank, Tim.
I need to like write a book on that. Like my first step in writing this book was actually writing. Best action performance: Chris Pratt, Jurassic World; Dwayne Johnson, San Andreas; Jennifer Lawrence, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2; John Boyega, Star Wars: Force Awakens; Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool; and Vin Diesel, Furious 7. You know, I'm not even going to read them all now. It's getting too long. So the point is, Best Hero, Daisy Ridley got that. Best Villain, Adam Driver. Best Virtual Performance, Lupita Nyong'o. Ensemble good cast, on, right? Star Wars The Force Awakens. I think that's it. No, best fight. It was Rey versus Kylo Ren.
Yeah, that Star Wars better Force win. Awakens.
You gotta think that's gonna win.
What else is it up against?
Let's see. Ryan Reynolds versus... I'm sorry, that's not the characters. Deadpool versus Ajax in Deadpool. Hugh Glass versus the Bear in The Revenant.
That's pretty great.
Imperator Furiosa versus Max.
Eh?
Iron Man versus Hulk. Rey versus Kylo. And Susan Cooper versus Leah from Spy.
Wait, Iron Man versus Hulk?
Yes, in Mad Max. I need to Jeez. Shut up. Avengers, Age of Ultron. When he was in the Hulk
Buster. How many years is this? Did that come out last year?
Yeah, it came out in May. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yeah. Damn, man.
I know. Before you know it, I'll say something about Star Trek and they'll just all be over. So, anyway, those are the nominees. 11 nominations for The Force Awakens at the MTV Awards. We'll see how many they win, but I guarantee you it will be more than at the Academy Awards.
Yeah. It's gotta be.
That's the other thing. It used to be, you know, if you feel depressed or bad about yourself, just remember you've won as many Academy Awards as Leonardo DiCaprio. You can't say that anymore, but you can say you've won as many Academy Awards as The Force Awakens. Uh-huh. Am I right?
You got it.
You're right.
All right. So next news topic. Chewie is in the Han Solo spinoff. I really don't know why why some people are kind of freaking out about this. Frankly, it'd be more of a news story if they said that Chewie was not going to be in the Han Solo spinoff. But there you have it. Bob Iger confirmed that he will be in the movie in 2018. Ryan Johnson tweeted out did he tweet the link or was it just on Tumblr?
Which link are we talking about?
The set photo with the cinematographer.
Oh, I thought it was on. I know it was on Tumblr.
It is on Tumblr. I'm just trying to remember if he tweeted a link to or not. But in any case, Ryan Johnson put out a picture on his Tumblr of the cinematographer Steve Yedlin of Episode 8. I started to say The Force Awakens, but then again, it's Episode 8. We don't have a title. And they're finishing week 4. And in this photo, we see what everyone's assuming it obviously is the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. And the cinematographer is standing in front of it. It's in black and white because Ryan Johnson likes to do that. And if you look in the right place, actually, it seems that Chewie is sitting in Chewie's seat in the cockpit. Or something similar, because there's something furry in his seat. So, only so many options there. Not much there. It's just kind of fun. Nice to see.
Someone's got coffee. I saw that pic.
What?
There's a coffee cup sitting there.
Oh, so there is. Like, doesn't have a Starbucks thing on it, but...
I don't know if they have Starbucks in England. They probably do, but
they have like 3 Starbucks every 5 miles. It's
it's global. It's everywhere.
Pretty much.
It looked like there was other people standing in that cockpit that besides Chewie. I didn't even see Chewie, to be honest. But I was trying to look. It looked like 2 people in some kind of uniforms. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a guy. If you look into the picture, there's a guy to the right of. The man, Steve Yedlin's legs, and he's like on his phone or something. Can't tell who it is. It kind of reminds me of Lawrence Kasdan, but of course I'm not thinking it is. I can't tell who it is. And then is there someone at the bottom? It's really hard to tell with the black and white and the shadows, but it might be.
Either way, I guess we now know that the Millennium Falcon is in episode 8.
Woo! Spoilers! This isn't our non-spoiler section, huh?
Right, and Chewie's in the Han Solo movie.
I know, we're getting off the rails here with our spoilers. Sorry. So let's get into our discussion, which is really just one topic. It involves Darth Maul's role in Star Wars Rebels coming up. Apparently, the episode in season 2 called Twilight of the Apprentice, both parts 1 and 2, we have a description, and which we have talked about before. But a more specific description is that Kanan, Ezra, and Ahsoka follow an Inquisitor to the planet Malachor. They hope to capture and interrogate him in order to get information about Darth Vader. Soon they meet another individual planning to attack the Sith. So everyone is really assuming, as it's pretty apparent, that other individual will be Darth Maul. Because who else would be this other individual planning to attack the Sith they suddenly run into when we know Darth Maul, or not Darth anymore, will be in the series, probably toward the end for the finale.
Right.
And it just makes sense, because how did Darth Maul's story end in the Clone Wars? Not very well for him. And he's probably going to be looking for a way to get back at Sidious. And what did Sidious do? He took Maul's apprentice.
And he took his shirt.
His last shirt.
Right.
Now it's personal.
So what's going to happen is Maul's going to go after Vader to take the apprentice of Sidious, and he's going to take Vader's chest plate and put that on. All right.
You're going to take Ahsoka's shirt.
Whoa.
Okay.
I didn't mean it that way.
I know you didn't, but at least she's an adult now.
I'm just thinking that perhaps, maybe Maul kills her. I don't know.
Oh, man.
She's not going to die at all.
Weird. If Maul killing her wouldn't really make any sense, though, for me. Like, because Maul changes, you know, during that Clone Wars arc, I feel like, or before it, you know, like, all he cares about really is screwing with Kenobi. And I don't know. I'm very curious to see where he's going to be at, you know, whatever, 15 years later, 16 years later.
Well, here's the big problem for me. If they're going to have Maul go after Vader, obviously we know who wins in the end.
Darth Maul.
Right.
No, because Vader's dead, man. Maul survived getting cut in half, Tim. We know Vader dies. Who's to say Maul doesn't show up in Episode 9?
Oh, spoilers.
Super old Maul.
No, because
this time all he has is a Speedo because he lost his pants too.
He's wearing a Speedo on his robot.
Okay. Yeah, he's got the back to tank diapers on.
Okay, we're gonna name this episode Speedo Darth Maul, and everyone who sees it is going to immediately do a facepalm. But no, my problem is that we know obviously Vader's going to win if there is some sort of confrontation. And frankly, it's going to be a little disappointing to have Maul lose again, because even though he did some interesting things in the Clone Wars with Satine and how all that went down, ultimately he always loses. And I know a lot of people are upset at that. He's supposed to be this big bad guy who does all these bad things, and he's always losing. So if you put him against Darth Vader, he's going to lose, and I feel like that will be disappointing for some people.
I mean, I'll have to wait to see the episode, but I'm not quite sure how. Clearly, Maul is more powerful than Ezra or Kanan. He's certainly more powerful than the Inquisitor.
Average Jedi. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if he beat Qui-Gon, you have to imagine that Maul is more powerful than Kanan, than Ezra, than any of these Inquisitors. The only person he's not as powerful as is, you know, the only person he can't beat is Darth Vader. So I don't know where his story goes. Although the only thing I can imagine is perhaps, you know, they introduce Maul a little bit this season, have him hold over into season, you know, 3. But I don't see his story wrapping up anytime soon. You know, I think they're going to send Ezra down the path, you know, the dark path for a little while. Hopefully he goes full Dark Jedi or full Sith. God, I'd love to see that.
What do you guys think about Maul?
Pretty impressive.
What do you think about Maul after this whole thing goes down with Vader and he potentially works with Kanan and Ezra and all that? What do you think about the idea? Of course, I'm not saying this is going to happen at all. That Maul sort of allies or forms some sort of alliance with the Rebels.
You can't. I don't believe there's redemption for him, because he's never been good that we've seen, or heard of, really. I don't believe you can have redemption for a character who's been consistently evil. Like you couldn't have Tarkin have had a redemptive arc. I don't believe. You know, with Kylo, you know, a lot of people hope Kylo is redeemed.
I don't.
Well, yeah, but I'm hearing a lot of people would like to see him redeemed, but he just killed his dad. So you're not, you know, I don't think you can come back from that, so to speak.
Well, actually, no, I take back my statement. I actually think it would be very interesting to see that happen, but not in a Vader kind of way, which is, okay, now that everything's over, I'm redeemed. If Kylo becomes, quote-unquote, redeemed, I'd want it to be before anything happens, so he's fighting back-to-back with Rey against the bad guys. But that's a side note. The thing about Maul is that he was taken at a young age. He wasn't inherently evil from the beginning. So he was raised to be evil, and he's had an evil life, but that's not necessarily defining him, even though it has for a long time. There's also been a lot of space since Sidious turned on him.
Well, yeah, and I think that isolation, you know, the huge gap, the, what, like, 13-year gap in the before Clone Wars, or 12-year gap, like, he transformed. I don't think he was about... I mean, sure, he knew the Sith rules still once he got regained his composure, but I feel like he transformed. He became something of singular focus. And once that has to change, once Kenobi's in hiding, unless they do a story like Old Wounds or a story like where he encounters Kenobi at some point, you know, that can't be... I feel like already that his focus has changed by the time Clone Wars is ending, and he becomes a very different person, I think. And I think you're right, Tim, it's possible for there to be change, but I see what Mark's saying, that it's not... I don't know, the redemptive arc is hard for Maul, because it's hard because... he doesn't have the onus of responsibility in the same way we see with Kylo, because we know that he was, you know, you hear his mom say he was seduced by Snoke. That implies that he fell for something. Whereas if they have the origin of Maul is that he was taken as a small child, then he didn't fall for anything. He didn't have any choice, you know. And
yeah, but here's the other thing: who said anything about redemption? At the same time, he doesn't have to be good. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? So he can do some sort of alliance with the rebels just to get at Vader and the Empire and the dark side without necessarily having to be a good guy.
Well, then the only possible thing that would make sense, though, is that Ahsoka's not around, and that, you know, because if Ahsoka's around and Maul's like, "Hey, let me help you out," I don't think she'd do it.
Well, that's possible. So, she might not like it, but maybe someone overranking her says, "We'll deal with it."
Who overranks her?
Commander Sato, right?
I don't think she gives a crap about Commander Sato, to be honest. She does maybe what she wants.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I mean, we're talking about, you know, possible redemption from Maul, but you know, in the clip that was released to where, you know, he's teaching Ezra how to choke somebody out, I don't think there's much redemption there.
No, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I don't think he's going to turn around to be a hero.
But yes, I would like to see Ezra choke somebody out. I'm in.
It would add gravity to the situation.
I mean, like I've said before, you cannot be too precious with these characters. You know, just because they're animated or whatever reason, you've got to have some real sort of consequences for these people. So anything to where they grow or change, they may not change in a way that we like, but as long as they change and they move forward in some fashion, you know, and possibly even perish, that's a good thing for the show. Kids need to learn about death. Sorry.
They do, man. You guys ever see David the Gnome? Those gnomes turn into trees, man.
What is it?
In the last episode of David the Gnome, they're just like, "Hey, gnomes live a long time. They live to be like 500. But then they go up to the top of the mountain and they turn into a tree and they die." And that was the last episode of the show.
Either of you guys ever see Watership Down?
Oh yeah, man! And it's such a good book.
Well, I never read the book. I saw the movie when I was really young, and that ending, you know, the ending devastated me to where. That was when, you know, I remember crying in the front room and my mom's holding me and I don't understand what's going on and why, where'd this guy go? Where'd he go? And she's like, "He died." And I was like, what's death? And, you know, and I'm somewhat of a well-adjusted individual and, you know, in my old age. So kids are going to learn about it. It may be something that brings some emotions out, but you know, sometimes it's easier to deal with this type of death rather than it being someone who is really involved in your life And really, you know, if you get used to the concept of, you know, characters or, you know, or imaginary or fictional characters dying, you know, it might just make it just a little bit easier to swallow or to understand, you know, when somebody that you really know and a real person, you know, passes away. So I don't think we should sugarcoat things for a younger audience. Obviously, it doesn't have to be graphic or gratuitous, but, you know, don't shy away from some of the harder
realism.
Things in life that, yeah, I mean, that people have to learn. I mean, kids are strong. Kids will carry on. They're good at that.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's like Bambi's mom. Maybe a sub right. could be Bambi's mom for some kids.
Or Dumbo's mom. It's been a long
everybody's,
time.
Everybody's mom dies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Right.
Ezra's like parents.
Staple of Disney.
It really is. Like Little Mermaid's like, dude, your mom died a long time ago off camera, but we're still going to mention it. it happened.
Yeah, kids are used to it.
I mean, even as recently as Frozen, with all that went down, parents.
That's both parents. See. That was a superhero origin because that's both parents get knocked out.
Yeah.
So many superheroes, like 90% of them are orphans.
Yeah. Well, here's the last thing I want to suggest before we get into our spoiler section is that Ahsoka does not recognize Maul because he's only in a Speedo, and she thought surely he cannot lose any more clothing. So it can't be Maul, so she lets him on.
It's possible. It's possible. I think the robot legs give it away. And his tattoo.
He got a can of spray paint that 3PO used for his arm. Or will eventually use for his arm, but he used them on his legs, so you can't tell that they're fake.
Yeah, you know what? Speaking of that, why couldn't C-3PO just spray paint his damn arm?
You know, that's a good question. I've always felt like there was a symbolic reason behind it, such as like something about R2. Like, you know, when R2 went away, went to sleep or whatever, he made some comment about how he liked 3PO's red arm, which was only temporary, and so 3PO kept it around until R2 was awake again. Because if you notice in The Force Awakens, after R2 wakes up, next time we see 3PO, his arm is gold again. So that was my working theory until I realized early on 3PO tells BB-8 like something about how, yeah, you're right, I've got to get the arm replaced. So I don't know.
Plus they're doing the story about it, you know, in the comic someday, maybe.
Yeah.
Like that comic was supposed to come out before The Force Awakens came out.
Yeah, November.
Yeah, like late November, early December, I think. And now, here it is. It's been delayed again. I think it's now scheduled in like mid-April. So we'll find out that story maybe.
That comic's never come out.
No, it was a joke. It was a joke that somehow snowballed. Like the one chart about how C-3PO got his red arm. Like that is, oh my God. I'm mildly interested in it because I'm a Star Wars guy, but come on, like, what kind of minutia could we possibly have? Yeah, like for a whole one shot, or
if anything, they can take care of that in four sentences in a novel. You don't need a comic book for it.
Yeah, no, it feels like excessive minutia to write a whole story about. I mean, at least it's a one shot, not like a 4-issue miniseries. That would be a bit excessive.
Well, let's go ahead and get into our spoiler section, if you guys don't mind.
Let's go for it.
Hey, can you do spoiler section backwards?
Whoa, my brain just exploded trying to hear that in my head.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll do that somehow.
Just a thought.
I mean, how do you guys think that went last time? How do you think we sound backward?
It sounded kind of cool.
I liked it, and we heard good things from people.
Yeah, I was impressed with how many different sounds came out. Jared, I remember one point you sounded like you were speaking Japanese.
That's interesting.
That should be how we do a giveaway if we ever have anything to give away. Is we tell you something, you know, and it's backwards, and somebody better figure out how to reverse it.
Man.
Download a program, and then it'll tell you what to do, and the first person who figures it out gets whatever giveaway we don't have.
That's my friend Phil and I in junior high, we used to screw around with audio equipment because he was the sound guy at our in our theater department in our freshman year, and we were messing around with stuff, and we would always record ourselves backwards and then replay it and try to teach ourselves how to say it backwards and then record it and then play it backwards so it sound right. And like we can do it very often, but it's kind of fun. I think that's a good idea for a trivia contest or some sort of giveaway.
And you were making fun of me for knowing Arabesh.
Yeah, but you learned an alphabet. I spent 20 minutes doing something over the course of a week, you know, over like 5 days.
Well, yeah, it really didn't take me that long, though.
Because Bye Bye Birdie wasn't super interesting to me at 14.
No, but honestly, though, it really didn't take that long because it wasn't like you're learning a new form of speaking. It's just a replacement for, you know, the alphabet we already know and use. So it really wasn't all that hard, but that's just me.
Serenade us in Klingon, Tim. That's all I ask.
Okay. I know this is a podcast, so y'all can't see the face I'm making right now, but it's like, yeah, okay.
Super happy.
Let's talk about Rogue One before we get to Episode 8 stuff.
Hey, Tim, real quick, do you know Esperanto?
That sounds extremely familiar, but I can't think of it right now.
In the 80s, they believed they could create a universal language by just randomly combining Spanish and English.
It was supposed to be the language of the future, Tim.
And how did that work out?
You just
it's a trivia question.
Yeah, it's a side note in history. It did not work out as well as planned.
I guarantee you more people know Arabesh or Klingon than they know Esperanto.
I think you're right. We might be the only people left who know what we're talking about.
Yep.
I don't know. Google Translate has Klingon in there, so
it does not have Esperanto, so
yeah.
No, that's point one for Klingon. Let's get Arabesh in there.
Well, they have it for written things, I think.
They can't for anything else.
Right.
It's English. We keep going over this.
Well, I know that's my point, because I don't know if they have like a speaking translation for Klingon, because I know that like, the Google Translate app will translate for you and
if
speak
they
it.
Don't, that's something some nerd should get on, but that's for
yeah.
Whatever. Podcast, Stardate, 2187.
I'll try that sometime just because I'm completely curious. I would never use it ever, but I'm just curious. Rogue One.
Make sure nobody thinks Tim likes Star Trek. He just wants to make sure.
Somebody should ask Siri if she knows Klingon and see what she says.
Hold on. Give me a second.
What, do you have an iPhone?
Do you know Klingon?
Maybe you have to say Siri. Do you know Klingon?
No, she doesn't. You can do that in Siri settings.
Ask her if she knows Esperanto.
Do you know Esperanto?
You sounded so defeated. Check it
out. Okay, well, she she brought up a Wikipedia article for Guy Esperanza, so...
What the hell? Okay. Who the what? Is Guy Esperanza?
He's an American singer.
That's the name of this episode.
What?
Is Guy Esperanza?
He is an American singer best known as a New York-based metal band Riot's original frontman from 1976 to 1981. He played at the first Monsters of Rock Festival in 1980 and sang on their first three albums, 1977's Rock City, 79's Narita, and 81's Fire Down Under, before leaving the band in 1981. And there's more on him, but that's irrelevant.
I hope we have one listener who, when we like, who the hell is Guy Speranza? They're like, what, you don't know Guy Speranza?
Yeah, that would be awesome. And for the record, I don't have an iPhone.
Monsters of Rock!
But I do have an iPod, so I worked it.
Sorry, go ahead. Do your spoiler thing, Tim.
Rogue One. Let's see. A couple things for Rogue One. First off is the Enforcer droid. Did you guys read about that?
Yes.
It's the droid we've been talking about for a while.
Actually, I listened to the competing podcast and I heard all about it.
Well, competing's a strong word there, buddy.
Superior.
Yeah, you know, that's the only word for it, right?
Yeah. What do you guys think?
It sounds pretty cool. I mean, it almost feels like they're using some, you know, Phantom Menace or some prequel influences. If it is, you know, based around, are we talking about the? Are we talking about what's his name's character?
Yeah,
Tudyk.
Alan Tudyk.
Yeah. So if it kind of looks like a battle droid or has battle droid influences, yet you know, 8D8 or 99 or 10D10 or whatever the hell his name is.
I think EV99. I think.
Yeah, whichever. Oh, one of them droids. I think that's cool. I, you know, like you and I mentioned briefly, it sounds like they're going to get really wacky or crazy with the designs, and I think that's a damn cool thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm excited about it because I feel like the descriptions that Jason at MakingStarWars.net put up, including a quick sketch that he and Amanda were doing, I think it looks pretty good because it looks authentic to the era, because they were talking about the inspiration that might have come from the super battle droids from the prequels in maybe like the color, even though this is a little bit darker. The overall shape, the head, of course, is different. But I think that's great because, again, from their descriptions, which if you guys haven't read them, I suggest going to MakingStarWars.net and checking it out. It sounds really authentic to, like I said, what I would expect a droid at the time to be. And if I remember correctly, the droid was originally an Imperial droid that has since been reprogrammed to assist the Rebels. So it has an Imperial logo on its shoulder, and consequently, it's relatively intimidating because it was an Imperial droid. So it's 8 feet tall, and its arms go down to about, or the arms and hands go down to about where the knees are. So it's an interesting, imposing droid, but it's working for the good guys, even though he has an Imperial logo on him.
I think that's cool.
I think it'll be pretty awesome.
Where'd Jared go?
I'm here. I was trying to get my cat to stop talking.
What was the cat saying?
He had the insight that Alan Tudyk also played a robot in iRobot. He played the murderous robot.
And the robot spoke Esperanto.
I'd have to rewatch that, but
I saw it again on TV a little while back, and it was so funny because at the time when it came out, I was so impressed with the graphics, and now I'm watching it and I'm like, it's not all right. But that's how it goes with movies.
Yeah, you know what's weird is some of the. I hate all the practical effect pro stuff, but sometimes that stuff does hold up better. Like Brazil, like all that stuff's real puppets and you know, non-digital stuff, just because they didn't have the technology at all then. And you go back and rewatch that, the man made of brick and the hallucination, or the giant angel wings, they all look super awesome still because they really built those things.
Yeah, man. You know, real sets, practical effects.
If they do a really good job, it's not that it's better than digital, but it does. Once it's really there on screen, it looks the way it's supposed to. You don't have to do anything, you know. Whereas the digital stuff's been evolving for a long time, and what do you call it? iRobot came out 15, 16 years ago, 14 years ago.
I would guess about 15.
Yeah, it was a while ago. So we would expect there to be a learning curve and for things to be superior.
10 or 15. But yeah, I feel like the actors would feel like everything's changed, but nothing's changed, just to finish that part out.
Good job.
He's
Mark Hamill.
Yeah. The other thing from Rogue One we were going to talk about is the...
Can we talk about the space horse?
We're getting there. It's episode 8. We're on Rogue One.
Oh, I'm ready for the space horse.
Apparently. So, the Shadow Troopers of the Death Squad in Rogue One. Talked about them before, about the sand troopers, shadow troopers, scarab, all that stuff we talked about before. The interesting development with the shadow troopers, we talked about the green lights that are around the mouthpiece area on their helmets. It seems that they also have green lights coming from the sides of their eyes, as it was described. Like if you put a pencil in your ear and the flashlight, like pen light, is shining forward. Either it's like a targeting system or an actual flashlight or something along those lines. That's how it's been described.
Shut up.
As always, check MakingStarWars.net.
Tell them a cat shirt.
I was hoping you were talking to me.
Definitely.
They're going to be like predators.
Yeah, or like they had them in the Clone Wars. The clones would sometimes have light shining from either side of their visors.
Yeah.
Can we... This is all fine and dandy, but can we talk about how there's legitimate concept art of Adats coming out of the water?
I am all on board with this. As long
Go
as
for
I
it.
Mean, can we just acknowledge that my fantasy may become a reality?
I think
there is concept art
floating out there of Adepts in the water, and that's pretty cool.
I think that would be visually stunning. I would love that. And if Vader is on top of them when they come out of the water, I think I owe you money, though. If Vader's on top of them.
Thought I said Boba Fett.
Oh.
We said Vader in the original prediction. The most recent prediction, we had Boba Fett riding it, being dropped out of a Star Destroyer into the ocean as if it were from Doctor Strangelove.
Right.
When we get to it, I'm going to say Boba Fett's riding the space whore.
All right.
That's
then.
My new prediction.
Okay, so anyway, green lights coming from the Shadow Troopers. I think that's going to look awesome. The Shadow Troopers on their own are going to look amazing. Add those green lights on the mouthpiece and potentially
red light.
Some sort of targeting system or anything. I think that's red light. I think it's fine. I'll stop talking.
Are you supposed to say green light? Remember that game?
Yeah, that's what Jared does. I stopped talking.
Oh, all right. Never mind. Carry on.
Well, I'm waiting for Jared to say green light. Do you not know the rules?
I do, but I wasn't playing.
All right, so green lights.
Get together for a game of Snake in the Grass.
What's that?
Snake in the Grass?
No, I couldn't hear you. I was talking.
So we need to get together for a game of Snake in the Grass.
Wow, that's a sentence I don't say that often.
You know what would be fun? If me, you, and Jared just did Leapfrog. That would just be an amazing time. Do kids even do Leapfrog anymore?
I think so. I don't really know.
Yeah, I think some kids do.
I don't think so. I think kids are too busy looking at their iPods and their tablets. And, you know, you tell them, you know, let's play Leapfrog. You'd be like, what the hell are you guys doing?
They're like, yeah, I'll get on my learning frog tablet or whatever they're called.
Those are called leapfrogs. Those are literally called leapfrogs.
Okay, well, there you go.
They've appropriated.
For kids. Kids don't play that. They don't play Tiddlywinks. They don't play jacks. They don't do marbles.
Kids
probably
do play,
better.
Kids do play with marbles. Yeah. No, my nephew has like a big marble set with a maze thing, and he plays with it.
Shoots it, knocks it out, and then takes the other kid marbles.
No, he doesn't play the game marbles, but he does play with marbles still. Like they still do physical stuff, but you're not wrong. Like little kids play with tablets as well.
I don't know. Jax never really entertained me that much. I always gave them a shot, but they just didn't really entertain me. I don't know.
I was in the Pog generation, so.
You know, I need to know why, or I need to know if Noah knows what Jax are.
No, Noah's. Knows what Jack Lynx are or Jack Daniels because he's drinking too young. If you ask him what pickup sticks is, he's going to think it's Chinese takeout.
No, that might be true. That sounds like him.
That's true.
I will never cease to be amazed at how he doesn't know a world without Netflix. You know, let's talk about episode 8 stuff so Mark, you can be happy with
our Space Horse.
We'll get there in a minute. Not yet.
Come on, man.
First thing. Is that Ray, the character, may be involved with the Dubrovnik filming scene. Daisy Ridley did say that she will not be on location. However, her double, or stunt double, I believe her name is Chloe Bruce, I believe, is on set in Croatia at Dubrovnik and will be involved with some, supposedly some stick involving battle fighting scenes. So Ray should somehow be involved with that. And on top of that, it says stick involving battle, which implies she's not using a lightsaber, but her staff. What do you guys
think
about that?
Which has lightsabers at the end.
Does it, though?
I don't know.
Do you think it's like Plagueis' staff, like people were saying for forever? Or...
No, I don't.
Because I, you know, honestly, I would be surprised if they put that much thought into it when they didn't even use it at all in the movie other than just having her use it as a staff to hit people with. You know, I don't see why they would make it a lightsaber staff without hinting at it or anything, but
no, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if the person who's paid to be the stunt double for Daisy Ridley does other stunts as other characters, even background characters. It would make complete sense to me.
I think you're right.
True.
Like, that does make a lot of sense. They have the same, they have, you know, background characters reused for different characters all the time. So it would just have to be anyone with their general, you know, build and height that might need a stunt. And it's, you're absolutely right. I think that's quite plausible.
You're not gonna, if you're paying her a certain salary, you're not gonna have her sit around and wait for the stunts. If there's other stunts to be done, come on over and do some stunts.
You know, that is very true. And stick involving battle or fight scenes could be kind of generic if someone just grabs something on the road to fight with.
Yep.
All right, well, theoretically, Rey may be involved. We don't know, but she may be involved with that scene somehow. And, of course, even if she's not there at Dubrovnik to do the stunts and the character is involved, she can be filming the rest of it at Pinewood if her character is involved. There are there are green screens in Dubrovnik in the background behind some of where they're filming things, and they are also going to complete some of the filming at Pinewood. So we don't know the full picture yet of that scene, but we do definitely have some ideas, which is what I guess we'll get to now. First, let's talk about something to make Mark happy. How about that space horse?
Wait, what?
Space horse.
Oh.
What?
I thought it was a space whore. Who cares about a space horse then?
What? Do you not read the notes I send anybody?
I'm just joking. That was a long term joke. I set that up a long time ago.
I noticed that.
You
actually.
Did. I heard yeah. you.
Anyway.
Very good job. Fortunately, I heard you say space horse earlier, so
whatever. I think the space horse is. I'm down for a space horse.
Have you seen it?
I'd be down for space horse, like from what was that? Battlestar Galactica, where they had like the weird looking girls with like three eyes, and giant afros. What? No, you guys never watched Battlestar Galactica?
No, I did. I don't remember the three eyes
or one eye. There was like a singing trio. They were singing disco at some space bar. Seriously, it was some crazy. The 70s were crazy. Let me tell you that. But the one thing Tim and I were talking about briefly before you got online today, Jared, is just, you know, the amount of interesting looking things that we're starting to see. You know, there's a space horse, and there's that one character that looked evil as hell wearing a tuxedo.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, wow, this is, you know, this is not what I was expecting, but. You know, you just throw established Star Wars characters in pretty much anything fantastical or weird at this point, and we'll buy it. We'll understand it because it's the old combined with the new. So they could introduce Jackson right now for all I care, and I'd be in.
I'm down with it. I'm totally down.
Yeah, I love that character anyway. The green space rabbit. If you got a space horse, give me a space rabbit.
Might as well.
Well, also, like, you got Dracula on set. Did you guys see him?
I think I missed that one.
No, it's this guy who has his hair slicked back, and he's got the white tux-looking type thing with a medallion, and, of course, the black things over it.
You got a space vampire, too?
I mean, I don't think he's actually supposed to be, but that's just kind of what it reminded me from the odd angles that we were getting the pictures. Looked kind of like him.
I'm fine with space Dracula.
Yeah, you call him Chewbacca, right? What was that? Chewbacula? Chewbacula, yeah.
Chewbacca, space vampire Wookiee.
I like that.
Endless possibilities. But yeah, so as you were saying, Mark, there are a bunch of very interesting-looking things from this Dubrovnik set. Not only the physical set with the structures that they've built, or the items that they've built, but also the creatures and people. And, you know, let's go ahead and get into this one point. I was going to get to this later, but let's just do it now. What do you guys think it's going to be? Because there are two leading theories. There are a bunch of theories, but two leading theories as to what's going on in this scene. I don't know how many of the pictures you guys saw or the videos, but they're filming, and everyone seems to be wearing similar things, very similarly styled. They're in some sort of ritzy-type area, it seems. And at some point, they go down to the beach, which is just off the side of where they're filming. And so they have the potential police officers there. what are you guys thinking might be happening here?
Poe and Finn go on a party cruise.
Okay, unlikely, Jared.
I don't think that's likely. I don't know. I've heard all sorts of speculation about it, but I don't know, man. I feel like I'm too far away from anything to have any real ideas, and I don't know. Everything seems like an open-ended possibility, except for maybe the party cruise.
Well, here's
Watch. Watch me be right.
you were potentially right about the AT-AT, so you might be.
Well, here's the thing. We have the pictures of the potential police officers. They seem to be some sort of security-type personnel. And we're thinking police officers because they have plastered on their foreheads CBPD. And this is an example of why it's helpful for you guys to know me, because I can actually read these things.
You are awesome.
Of course, CB people talking about that might be something completely new. Who knows? PD, probably referencing police department, given their overall look of security and all that. Anyway, uniforms. So they're there, as in they are there at the location. There's a land speeder, which we talked about before, which explodes in half. They got a bunch of people dressed up in... They're covered in black cloaks, I guess you could call them, to disguise their costumes. However, it looks like what they have on underneath is like a white tuxedo with black over it, just so it looks pretty similar to what we're seeing anyway. Now,
is this members of the resistance infiltrating something and then it leading into a chase where they then go down to the beach and escape on a party cruise?
As far as we know, that is possible. It's not impossible. I think one of the leading theories that I could definitely see happening is that this is Han's funeral or some sort of remembrance.
That's what I've seen most speculated, but...
Yeah, well, part of the reason is because Michael Kaplan was on set holding something that looks like the art he drew for Leia's mourning outfit, which is all black, and that they're going to be using in Episode 8, and he was holding that on that set. So that makes sense there. Also, since it's on like a ritzier side, people are dressing up, you know, seems a little bit more nice, if you will. There is one character people have pointed out who's in completely dressed in white. He seems to be some sort of alien. But again, complete speculation here, but he might be some sort of person officiating a funeral type thing. And what else? They go down to the beach, which might be like a sending off, like a symbolic sending off of, they don't have the body, but something. And the police are there as like an escort. So it's a scenario that would make sense. It's not the only scenario that would make sense, but it certainly could be the case.
So if this is some sort of funeral or whatever, or there's a gravesite or whatever, watch them introduce the new Han Solo through that, and you'd have like a video image of him morphing from, you know, standalone movie of Han Solo to older Han Solo. And I gotta stop saying Han. I've always said Han. It probably bugs the shit out of people.
I think when George Lucas does it the way he does it and tells everyone to say whatever they want, then we can't get annoyed with anyone for saying it weird. It's like Lando says Han.
Right.
He's his best friend.
I'm down with Lando. So
everyone else are strangers to him when they meet him and start calling him Han and keep it up. Who introduces him as Han? Obi-Wan. As far as we know, they've known each other for 10 minutes tops. It's like Lando's his oldest friend in the world and the only one we know who speaks English and basic and doesn't
except,
speak.
Except
you know.
For when Han Solo says his own name.
Yeah, but he can't hear how he sounds.
Well. Another very, very unbased rumor. It's kind of out there, but not confirmed in any way, shape, or form, is that Billy Dee Williams might be there to be Lando for this Han funeral type of thing. Frankly, if he is there, I think we would know, at least more than just a generic, airy type rumor.
If Lando does a eulogy, he better say Han.
Oh, I'm sure he would.
He can't start saying Han.
that blows continuity out the window.
Right. I'm sure he would. He might be there. Who knows? But it's interesting to see who is there, though. Finn is there. He rides the space horse at some point, along with what seems to be Kelly Marie Tran's character. And it's interesting what you said about them introducing a new Han type of person, because perhaps that's her. Maybe she's kind of taken that role of the not mystical, not Jedi related at all, just, you know, captain type personality.
Could be. I mean, the dynamic of the new characters is definitely a lot different. You know, we don't have the three that are supposed to be together like Han, Leia, and Luke. You know, you've got Poe, who only really interacts with Finn. You've got Finn, who interacts with both of them, both, you know, Poe and Rey, but they don't have the same, you know, dynamic that our original three characters had. So it's interesting where Poe might fit in, because if Finn's hanging out with a new character, you know, Poe and BB-8 are just chilling somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like we might see more Poe and Rey in this one.
Well, why would they even have a reason to be together?
For character dynamics, we haven't seen them yet.
I guess, but there's no logical reason for them to interact at this point. He's no different than any other star pilot or any other X-Wing pilot.
Well, maybe at the beginning of the movie, but maybe not by the end.
Possible. I mean, it's possible that they hang out and interact, but, you know, she's got her own crap going down with Chewie, R2, and Luke.
Well, also, they do talk in the novelization. Is that right?
They do at the end, I think.
Yeah, I think they have a miniature interaction where they have some sort of recognition of respect for each other, which could be like a basis for something down the road, some sort of an interaction. I don't know, but it might happen. But another person who is heavily rumored to be there isn't confirmation. And in fact, there are conflicting reports, but a heavy rumor is that Mark Hamill is there on the set as well.
It's heavy rumors.
Yes, but assuming he is, what would that mean to you guys? Like, would that say anything, or is that just normal?
It's so early. It's so early, and then you get a lot of stuff that's cut out, or changed around. I mean, I love speculating as much as the next person, but I have zero to go on. Other than a space horse and a land speeder.
Like, yeah, there's the land speeder chase that goes on. It explodes in half, which there are a bunch of pictures of that here. That was kind of cool, actually.
The thing is that at this point, you know, if suddenly, I don't know, because the time is not adding up. If this movie is to take place immediately after Force Awakens ends...
Yeah, that's true.
Finn's out riding a horse? He was in a coma last we saw him.
I think there's a deleted scene on the Blu-ray to come out. I think someone said where he comes out of the coma.
Yeah, was that also from Jason, where it's Finn gets up? I'm not 100% sure, but most of the news that you and I get is directly from Jason.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, who knows how they'll retrofit it or whatever, because now they're saying that Luke, you know, in Empire Strikes Back, Luke was on Dagobah for 6 months. That's what Pablo Hidalgo's saying, you know. So either A, time works different there like it does on Mortis, or, you know, Han and everybody else was in the Millennium Falcon and in a space slug for 6 months.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Or they spent way longer on Cloud City, and like, what were they doing on Cloud City? There's no way that makes any sense at all.
So I don't know which way they're going to go with the time, because, you know, and obviously this could be at the end of the movie. This could be after a time jump in the movie, but it doesn't really make any sense for me if they're just starting their training, why Luke and Rey are there with Finn and whoever else. It just doesn't seem to work for me. But then again, I'm not writing the movie, you know, I'm not directing it. So it could make sense, but it just doesn't feel like it.
What?
I just saw there's this poor dog walking around with only three legs.
Aww.
But the lady's walking him.
Oh, that's good.
So he's not a homeless dog. Sorry, I'm once again podcasting. This time it's from a park. No, it's from a park.
Next time it's Chuck E. Cheese. Pizza Place, park, Chuck E. Cheese. He's getting excessively, like, exponentially more stranger danger-y. I mean, the last time was directly into a preschool.
I do want to say about this set, address just a couple things. Because one, I think it looks amazing. Not only the set, but the people and the creatures and the artifacts, the land speeder. I think it looks fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it all in action. And but part of what I love about this, I told Mark earlier, The Force Awakens was a lot of modernizing what we already knew, which was fine. I loved it. But I feel like a lot of Episode 8, including what we've seen so far, is going to be new. Not modernizing things, it's going to be just new. So I'm looking forward to that. And I've seen a lot of people complaining that this seems to be reminiscent of the prequels in design. To which, I want to say, so what? Do you not understand? This is a universe. This is a concept. So the prequels happened in this storyline, and then the originals happened. But the prequels are still a part of the history of this place. So there are going to be, if you're trying to be realistic about it, there are going to be places in the galaxy and creatures and things that are going to remind you of the prequels, because they were built during that time, or they were around at the same time. Maybe even this creature was born at the same time. You're working in the same universe, so it's going to make sense, if you're going to be realistic about it, to have things be similar. That was my mini soapbox.
No, I think you did a good job, Tim. Soapbox speech. I don't know. I didn't disagree with you, so I was going to say you convinced me, but I already agree with you. Good job. I think it would be convincing if I didn't agree with you. I feel.
Okay, I'll take it. According to a report, Mark Hamill or his double, one of the two, is confirmed to be shooting at the beach location right off from Dubrovnik. So,
Mark was saying before, if it's a stunt double, it could possibly be somebody else.
Right, but since they say Mark Hamill or his stunt double, it's more likely to be the character Luke than if they just said the stunt double, period.
True, unless it's just a dude walking around in his civilian clothes or in those robes, but who has the beard like him.
It could be.
Just try to think outside the box. Right, I think you're probably right. But if most of the shots of them are, you know, coming out in the robes and whatnot so far that we've seen, you know, I guess those are all just descriptions, right?
Right. And it says Warwick Davis was also on set. We've seen a couple of videos of a camera on a car rushing past. It looks like the camera is going to be pointing at maybe a land speeder in what will later be following the camera and people dodging out of the way. We saw that. And we saw a video of someone either like exploding off the side of a stairway. Some people said force push. You know, maybe two different things. Who knows? It's hard to tell at this point. But things are happening. It's definitely an action sequence at Dubrovnik. Some people believe that it might be Corellia. That probably relates to the Han funeral type theory. But in any case, there is some sort of action that goes on. It looks like Finn is involved. And we'll probably get introduced to Kelly Marie Tran's character there as well. So if you guys want to check out any of these pictures, any of our listeners, they are out there through various places. I recommend makingstarwars.net. They got a very inclusive look at all of these things. If you're into it, I would totally check it out. The speeder looks amazing. The sets, the people, it looks fantastic. And this is the first time we get a feel for Episode 8, I think, because we don't even have it titled yet. So this is the first real clue to what it's going to be like for us.
You don't think it's really going to be Space Bear?
I hope not. I'm a little surprised we got these pictures, though, because so many people have talked about how, you know, there was that one paparazzi guy who was escorted away off the set.
Right.
And we got the drone army in the sky and all that. So I'm kind of surprised we have all these pictures and video of what's going on.
I was hearing some people speculate, people whose opinions I respect and who I think are pretty level-headed on the Star Wars news front and whatnot. We're speculating that it could be misdirection. I tend to think there's no way that there's this much stuff going on. I know it's not that expensive for them to do, but I just don't think they're going to be wasting their time trying to get these movies out on this regular schedule. I don't see them wasting everyone's time by doing that. I guess it's possible, but
it would be the ultimate troll.
It really would be. It feels like more like J.J. Abrams stuff than and not to say he's a troll, but just more of his level of secrecy. And I know he's still a producer, but it doesn't make sense that he takes a step back and it becomes so excessively more secret that there's not just the drone army, not just extra security, but also a completely dummy movie being shot. Like, I don't know. To me, it feels a little far-fetched, even though I could see where some of the startling, you know, like you guys were describing the tuxedos, you know, people are saying, what is this? This looks crazy to me. And like Mark said, I feel like I didn't contribute because in that one moment, because I thought, Mark, you nailed it. You stick, you know, Luke in Jedi robes next to those people, and it's Star Wars. All you need to do is throw something familiar in, and you're done. And one Athorian walking through the crowd, and I'm like, here's Hammerhead. That's Star Wars. I know what that is. And I feel like I don't know that. And one of the aliens that we see multiple versions of was in Maz's castle in the bar scene as well. The one that has a kind of angular, almost like fish-like face that you see a few different aliens of. That guy's a repeat species. So I don't know. It feels to me like it's probably what it appears to be, but it is the amount of footage we're getting is really interesting. I think you're right, and like I was speculating it based on the early photos of them building the sets. Like, it didn't seem like it was actually increased security there. Maybe it is at Pinewood. Maybe it is in other places in the beach locations where we're not getting shots as much as we are descriptions, you know, but I feel like it's counterintuitive, the lack of security here on the streets of Dubrovnik compared to the other places and what we're hearing. Maybe that's it. Maybe they're going to make us just question everything and not actually increase security and just tell us they are.
I don't know. But the rumors / reports, not confirmed in any way, but of a Lando-Luke reunion, that's kind of cool to think about. Whether it happens or not, it's just fun to think about. But any last thoughts on this Dubrovnik? We kind of really skimmed over it because there's a lot there to talk about. But anyone who's interested can research it. I recommend it. I think it's pretty fun. Any last thoughts before we get to the email we got?
No.
All right.
I'm good with going to the email.
Okay, so let's get to the email. We have an email from Josiah Ward, who is always awesome and writes into us with awesome emails. So thank you in advance for writing in, Josiah. He says, hey guys, my question this week is pure speculation and fun, and is about the Church of the Force. We don't know much about the Church of the Force or who its many members are. Could Ezra or Kanan have started the Church of the Force after the events of Rebels? I'm not sure if it's stated anywhere in canon when it was formed, so maybe they just joined at that point. I'm always trying to think of ways to fit them into future stories, even though I'm sure they'll just get killed off eventually. But let's speculate, Josiah Ward.
I do like that idea.
I think that'd be a very good way to connect them, because the Church of the Force is not strongly connected, at least as of now, to the sequel trilogy. So I think that would be a way to make people happy, like the nerds happy that Rebels is connected. Of course, I'm including us as nerds, that Rebels is connected to the movie somehow, but it is completely irrelevant to anyone who's just watching the movie or watching Rebels.
Well, have they said in Rebels at any point, may the Force be with you, off the top of your heads?
Yeah.
They have?
Yeah, remember in the first season when Bail was, he told Kanan that the Jedi used to say that, like,
okay,
and he said it right. I thought that Bail said it around Kanan. It was almost like the first hint of some involvement with Jedi stuff. And helped fuel the Ahsoka's fulcrum fire. I thought, but I could be wrong, but I could swear we heard it once at least.
I don't need Ezra and Kanan to be responsible for it. You know, I think it would be more interesting if they come across somebody who's already part of it. Like, it's been underground
you know, ever since the Emperor took over power. So it's sort of in secret circles, you know, perhaps they're drawing symbols to let each other know that that they're part of the Church of the Force, much like, you know, the Christians used to do with the fish.
Right.
That was the way they let each other know that they're, you know, a Christian. So it would be, it seems like it would almost be too late if Kanan and Ezra are starting it now, because I don't know if Lor San Tekka has been in the Church of the Force pretty much his whole life, but he's, you know, demonstrably older than Luke is. So either he's a late convert or whatever the situation is, but I don't need them responsible for it. I don't have a problem if they're in it or join it, and that's the way their story ends, I suppose, but it just seems too much happenstance if they're the founders of the Church of the Force.
I can see that. Like, it's just a little bit of too much of a coincidence to happen this late in the game, because, yeah, if they're trying to preserve the Jedi legacy, Kanan makes a lot of sense, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I definitely do agree with that. If someone in Rebels has to be responsible for it, my vote would actually go to Ahsoka, because she is not directly a Jedi.
Right.
But she is still about the Force and about the light side. So I think she would be more likely to create this Force entity or organization. So I wouldn't mind that. I agree with what you said, Mark. I wouldn't hate it if Ezra and Kanan were responsible. I would prefer it if Ahsoka was responsible, but I also do back up what Mark said.
Yeah, I don't need any three of them to be responsible for the formation of it. You know, I think it would be an awesome idea if perhaps in season three they run across somebody who's, you know, already in it.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it's the first time that they've seen in their lives, you know, an actual Force user, because they're living on faith that these people, you know, they've heard of these people, but nobody really, you know, not everyone ran into a Jedi. So it may, for some people, you know, like a 16-year-old or somebody's Ezra's age, it may be just on faith that the Force exists, you know, so maybe seeing them in action and seeing them use a Force, it backs up their beliefs, and it might be an interesting story for Rebels to tell. But, you know, I would prefer it, like I said, I prefer it to go that way rather than, you know, Ezra's the, what is it, John or Peter of the church.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also would like to get more on Lor San Tekka, because in the opening crawl, didn't it say something about him being an old ally
of Luke's? Yeah. And then if you read, like, they pretty much imply in the visual dictionary that, he's almost like an Indiana Jones.
Right.
You know, he's out hunting for, you know, artifacts, and I think his story would make, you know, either a fascinating, you know, animated series, perhaps for adults, or just be a great, you know, like the, I don't know, young Lor San Tekka would be an interesting comic book.
Well, I would like to hear more on him, because more explanation on him and on the Church of the Force and this other entity that is focused on the good guys but isn't a part of the Rebels or the Resistance. Because we have, like, you know, bounty hunters and the gangsters and all that. It's nice to have good guys who aren't part of the protagonists.
Well, you've got Maz, who's, you know, clearly in tune with the Force, but she's not a Jedi.
Right.
And she's been around, you know, I think they said she's older than Chewbacca, correct?
Yeah, they said she had the place for 1,000 years, and I thought Chewbacca was supposed to be just a couple hundred years old, like, tops.
Yeah, so clearly there's people who, you know, believe in the Force but aren't aligned with any sect. You know, it's like the people who believe in God but don't expound to be, you know, a Christian or a Baptist, or, you know, people that believe in the devil and don't necessarily say they're from the Church of Satan. It's just
almost like non-denominational Force
right,
believers.
Like, you're right.
Was it, yes, and the spiritual side rather than the dogmatic side.
Right. And that's the, we're used to the dogmatic side, you know, of Force users. We've seen the Jedi, we've seen, you know, the Sith, but I'm sure there are people out there who tap into it, you know, all the time, but just, they claim no affiliation. They're one with the Force, so to speak. So
It would be
sort of what Ahsoka's doing.
Correct. But I still think she needs to go.
I would actually be really interested if she did not. She's not responsible for its creation, but like you were saying, I think it's more realistic and more likely to happen that they would come across it in the series. And perhaps she's really taken by their message and either joins them or helps promote their cause or something. I think that would make sense.
No, that's a legit, honestly, and I'm for her. You know, I've talked about how she needs to die, but that is a legit way out for her. To just give up everything and try and, like, you know, sort of preach the Force to maybe to non-believers in other parts of the galaxy, like the Outer Rim or wherever. I mean, I think you could legitimately get away with that, and it wouldn't feel like a cop-out. It wouldn't feel like one to me. I mean, it still would be in a sense, but at least story-wise, you know, she's already in sort of that gray area.
Right.
That it would be believable to me.
I really like that. What I like most is that you've figured out some way to make Ron right. Because you've now created a situation where you are satisfied with her surviving.
I wouldn't be like jumping for joy. I mean, right. I think story wise, Ahsoka, you know, it's very poetic if Darth Vader strikes her down. But if somebody wanted to save her, and they probably will, it at least makes sense. A possible, you know, yeah. I mean, it would make sense to me. I wouldn't like it. I still would think it's a cop out, but I wouldn't think it goes against continuity because, you know, for her to stay as part of the Rebel Alliance, you know, as soon as if she's part of the Rebel Alliance when Luke's there, then continuity is blown out the window. Because there's like I've said before in that piece, there's a guy, she's now there. There's a guy named Skywalker who uses Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber. She's going to go up and say something to him. She's not going to hide in the shadows and be like, oh, I don't want to say anything to a guy with the last name as my master who happens to use a lightsaber and happens to use the Force. You know, and, she...
And plus... Sorry.
It just wouldn't make any sense for her to be part of the Rebel Alliance the minute Luke shows up.
Right.
Or any other lightsaber builders.
After the Death Star blew up, every Rebel knew Luke's name. So that's the other thing.
Also, I feel like Leia's exposure to the Force, the way she talks to Luke, the way she talks about not being able to understand it, I feel like what we saw in Rebels is okay. A few more instances where she might see something from afar, I'm okay with. But, like, operating side by side as a leader of the Rebel Alliance with Ahsoka, with her, knowing that she was a former Jedi, knowing she's a master of the Force, her unfamiliarity doesn't make sense anymore. I think there are definitely problems with the idea of her continuing on the role she's in now for much longer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a potential problem with her just, you know, running into Ezra and Kanan and all that as it is. But if it was a one-off, then you can kind of overlook it. Sort of like the, you know, the situations to where Grievous and Anakin never met up. I mean, they almost did. They were always like, you know, they played it.
The one on the subway thing, like the one where it was the long extended like train track type deal. And like they see each other from a distance and you see them like eyeballing each other. It's they, like at that point, they're almost having fun with it. They're just like,
yeah,
like what are we supposed to do, guys? Like our hands are tied.
A great question.
Yeah, no, Josiah always writes excellent blog posts and excellent questions to us. Yeah, he's an awesome dude.
And on the opposite side of things, what about the Knights of Ren? This is kind of my own question. It's not an email, but because some people have suggested that the Knights of Ren are just the opposite of the Church of the Force, where they're not necessarily Force users or Sith or anything, but they're supporters of the dark side. So what do you guys think about the Knights of Ren? What would you like to see them be as an organization?
I'd like to find out that they're very old. And they're just another denomination of Sith or you know, they're twisted Jedi, perhaps. They just, you know, they believe in the Force their own ways. And perhaps with the, you know, popularity of the Jedi, they kind of went into hiding for a while. And now with the Jedi gone, they're resprouting. So,
you know, I think I said this on Kessel Run Radio about 10 years ago, that I would like to see the Knights of Ren be kind of like what you were saying, I think, where they're like ancient, but never strong enough to exactly make a name for themselves, almost like a little side thing. And then Kylo or Snoke or somebody kind of discovers them and emboldens them, powers them, builds them up. Kylo's their leader, and because he saw potential and built them up to be his squad, and now they're a force to be reckoned with. They have a great history, but that also would explain why they weren't involved now, because he had the Emperor and Vader and you know, maybe Maul and all this going on, so they weren't interfering with anything because they weren't strong enough. But Kylo comes in, changes the whole thing, and now they're dedicated to him because he made them as powerful as they are, and he needs them because they're his squad. So I would like to see some dynamic like that with them.
Maybe Maul is the leader of the Knights of Ren. Maybe he founded it.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm throwing it out there.
Maybe. I mean, at least it's not like those people saying Boba Fett was one of them.
My question is, why are they wearing shirts then, Mark?
Because it was raining.
Good call. You okay? Oh, damn it. I almost went the whole episode.
See, I didn't even notice, though.
It was close.
All right. Well, yeah, thank you, Josiah. That was a great question. Got us talking about got a few things. So awesome. Thank you. And I look forward to maybe an email next week after. We'll see. Anyone else wants to send us an email to talk about on future shows? Any points you'd like to make on air or anything, speculation like Josiah had, anything, just go ahead. Send us an email at podcast2187@gmail.com. Yes, I am that original with our emails. Anything else, guys?
No, it was a great episode. A lot of talk.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I feel like this was our first substantial episode 8 episode, because it was the first time we really had anything to really, talk about, because we saw stuff finally. So we'll see. I still can't wait for the episode where we talk about the name, Star Wars : fill in the blank.
Monsters of Rock.
I need a Mark's bold prediction. Monsters of Rock?
Yes, Star Wars, Monsters of Rock.
I like it.
I'm still waiting for the rocks that talk to Luke, or do you mean
I like Jedi Monster of Rock.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't think that's going to be it, but
jeez, Tim, come on, have some faith. Now it won't. With that attitude.
Like a fairy just died or something, because I said.
That's right. You stole my wish, Tim.
it's going to be Church of the Force.
You blew out my candles. You stole my wish.
That would actually be... It might work. I don't think that would be the name, but that would be kind of cool.
Force Church.
Force Church.
All right. Well, before we get too carried away, that can happen.
Force Church Camp.
Too late. Carried away. All right. Thank you, guys. Have fun, and who knows what we'll be talking about next week. Maybe something good.
Hey, Jared.
What's up, man?
Can they find you on social media?
People can find me on social media as Joaquin Slowly. That's Joaquin Slowly. And I'm, here, and I'm on from a certain point of view, and I do art for Making Star Wars, and occasionally, every once in a while, when there's Indiana Jones news, you and I podcast together.
Yeah, that's slow in coming.
That's true. Once that movie starts getting made.
Yes. You can find me on social media. This is Mark. You can find myself at Griddle Marks, GRIDDLEMARKS.
And you can find me on Twitter at CHRISEVANS.
Yeah, right.
What?
Whatever, Team Cap.
Hey, you're there, aren't you?
What, on Team Cap?
Aren't you?
Of course. No, okay. Nobody beats Captain America.
Yeah, most definitely. Iron Man's the cause of all the problems. Like, plus, I've heard somebody say in our social circle, who I can't remember who it was, someone who I really respect, and all things considered, they'd be right. They said, in the real world, everyone would agree with Iron Man because, people with superpowers, should be kept in check. Yeah, except for the U.S. government has repeatedly been infiltrated by Hydra in their world. Like, it's not the real world. like, if you might as well just give all the superheroes to the bad guys, since they're in charge of the government. That makes no sense. Plus, yeah, no. Sorry. Until what, like 4 years ago, I had read every issue of Captain America ever made. So,
wow, nice.
Yeah, no, that and Batman, those guys were my comic book jam. So, I'm definitely Team Cap.
Nice. All right. If you don't want to find me under Chris Evans, don't. Then I guess you can find me at Trooper_5. I should find a way to like redirect anyone who goes there redirects to Chris Evans' page, just for fun. I don't know. Anyway, and you can also follow the show's Twitter account at podcast2187. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Tim.
Yes.
Live long and prosper.
I can't even think of a proper response.
Hey, I got one. Hey, Mark. Peace. Yeah. Long life.
Hey, I got one for you.
My fresh. I can't even say it. My fresh. I can't even say it.
All right, Tim, may the force be with you.